Professor Francis Leonard, a research associate on the three-year multidisciplinary project that aims to develop understanding of Pacific bark cloth manufacture through three research strands: scientific, historical, and conservation. Senior lecturer in textile conservation, University of Glasgow, UK, principal investigator. Francis Leonard trained at the Textile Conservation Centre at Hampton Court Palace in the 1980s and worked for 15 years at the TCC and as a freelance textile conservator in the southwest of England. She has been teaching textile conservation since 2001, taking on the roles of convener of the MA Textile Conservation at the University of Southampton, and since 2010, convener of the MPhil Textile Conservation at the University of Glasgow. Her research interests focus on gaining a greater understanding of textile artifacts, both in physical terms and in terms of their significance, so that we can make more informed decisions about conservation, treatments. She also enjoys interdisciplinary research and bringing together different areas of expertise to focus on research questions from different perspectives, a key aspect of the bark cloth project.
Thank you. Thanks very much for inviting me also to come along and speak today. Thank you. So, as Darren explained, my background is very much in conservation. So I'm a textile conservator by training, and bark cloth is one of these materials that it's rather hard to define. Is it a textile? Is it a paper? Is it a cloth? What is it exactly? It's a plant material, obviously. And so it tends to fall between a lot of different stools in terms of conservation. So often bark cloth might be treated by a textile conservator because bark cloth tends to crop up in museum collections with the textiles because of its function, but it might also be treated by objects conservators or also by paper conservators, particularly in the library context where we are at the moment. So it's an unusual material from that perspective. But I just wanted to just bring a few thoughts about conservation before you this evening, before thinking a little bit more specifically about the book. And as conservators, I mean, there were a team of conservators who work here in this building, here on the library collection, for working on the special collections. But as conservators, we all have concern for the long-term preservation of artifacts. So we're primarily concerned with making sure that objects are safe and will survive into the future. We're also concerned with access to those collections. So we're always treading a fine line, really, this careful balance between making things accessible, whether that's through display or through making them actually available for people to handle, and preserving them for future generations. So conservators are treading this fine line. But it's also important as conservators that we don't work in a vacuum, that we work with our colleagues who are curators, who are the owners and the stakeholders of these objects, so that we understand what's important about these objects, and that very much influences the way that we treat them and the way that we look after them for the future. And so it was really inspiring to hear Dagmar talking about, you know, what these objects mean to her as an artist. And the objects mean different things to different people and in different contexts. So we have to be very much aware of why these objects are important, what it is, what's important about them. And that very much influences the way that conservators work with objects and with books such as these. And so preservation is very much about understanding the materials, you know, what is something made of, what materials are used, what techniques are used, what condition is it in, and that will influence what we need to do to look after it for the future. You know, if we understand the condition that it's in now and how it's come to be in that condition, then we can do something about making sure that it survives for the future. And we're very much thinking about both physical and chemical deterioration when we look at any object. With books, often they're damaged physically just because of the mechanics of opening and closing books over many years. And you've all seen books in your own homes that get damaged just because of the way that they get pulled off the bookshelf by the back of the top of the spine. they might be open, sort of laid face down. These all cause physical damage to books. And of course, with very special books like the Shaw book here, we want to be very careful to avoid that. And so you'll see the way that the book tonight is being laid onto a cushion so that it doesn't open right up. And it's supported and protected while we're looking at it. But we also have to think very much about chemical deterioration. And that can be caused by the environment, by pollution in the environment, for example, by dust, which can be really acidic and very damaging. But we also have to think about what's going on within the book itself, what's happening with the materials within any object, but particularly with a book like this. And the Shaw book is interesting. These tapa samples are very interesting. As Billy mentioned, you know, the books are made out of rag paper. So 18th century paper is actually quite a stable material. Much later paper is a much more acidic material. More recent paper today is often made out of wood pulp rather than rags, and it is much more acidic and it deteriorates much more quickly. I mean, you've seen how newspapers, for example, turn yellow practically overnight, and that's because they're made of very poor quality paper, whereas this is good quality paper, so that's not such a problem. But we've got two different materials here. As well as the paper, we've got the bark cloth, and I really liked what Billy was saying about the, you know, the cloth made of paper, the paper made of cloth. The very really close connection between these two materials. It's cellulose material, so it's very similar chemically. And as a textile conservator, I've often had to think about textile pattern books where you've got little pieces of textile stuck to, or you know, stapled into to paper books, perhaps the manufacturer's sample books. And there you've got two very different materials coming together. But with the Shaw book and other books with bark cloth samples in, that's much less of an issue. So in fact, most of those samples of bark cloth are actually very stable. You'll notice probably that as Andy and Billy have been showing images of the book, how the pigments have often offset from the tapa samples, the bark cloth samples, onto the opposite page of the book. And that speaks very much to the way that the samples were made. The decoration is very often with pigment, which is applied using a variety of different methods, you know, printing, stamping, rubbing, stenciling. But often using pigments, which might be earth pigments, things like ochres, and might also, as Andy was mentioning, more be made out of natural plant materials. But they tend to be fairly loosely attached to the surface of the paper. Not very often do we find an actual dyeing technique which chemically binds the material of the plant material, for example, to the paper, and that would be much, much more closely bound, so much less likely to actually be rubbed off. So the fact that we often have the offset pigments on the facing page just tells us a little bit about how poorly bound those pigments actually are to the bark cloth. And we've got a couple of examples here, which I said that most of the bark cloth samples are actually in very good, stable condition, but there are a couple of issues that we've noticed with these, particularly these samples from the 18th century. There are a few examples of a very dark brown cloth, which is dyed in the true sense of the word, often with a mud dye, the paru dye that you find on other textile materials, particularly here in New Zealand. And we find this in European textiles as well, that dark brown dyes often cause damage to the substrate. You know, with European tapestries, we find that it's often the dark brown wool that is essentially self-destructs, because that dye is very acidic, often it contains iron, and those both cause damage. And so we found that this very dark brown coloured bark cloth is often breaking up. And it probably is just a result of this dyeing process, the acidic iron-rich dye that's being used. I mean, it has been suggested that perhaps this is a different type of fibre, you know, something different from the breadfruit or the paper mulberry. but we don't think it is. We think it is actually the result of the dye that's causing this dark brown coloration, causing the deterioration. But as Andy says, you know, part of the project is very much to identify all the materials that have been used so that we can really have a better understanding of these reactions and exactly what's going on. And also so that we can have a better sense of what's happening across the Pacific and, you know, again, as Andy was explaining, how things change over time or from one island group to another. And the other dye, which we've got a picture here, the red dye, matte dye, this is also interesting. There are accounts of, from Joseph Banks, talking about a brilliant red dye that's used on the bark cloth. These are the ones from Tahiti? Yes, from Tahiti. And he even recorded the fact that the dye faded very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And some dyes are really fugitive, you know, some pigments, some dyes, and fade very, very fast. And it's interesting that where it appears within the shore books on these samples, they are faded already. But that must have happened, presumably, before these samples were cut up and put into the books, because light is what causes fading of dyes and pigments. And so once it's closed within the book, that fading isn't going to happen. So this really tells us that these samples were faded before the sample books were put together. But again, this is a dye that we're trying to research a bit more. One of our colleagues is a material scientist, and she's doing analysis, but she's been trying to reconstruct this matte dye, but without a great deal of success, but it's something that we want to work on further. And then she's able to look, to have a sort of chemical reference, a chemical signature that she can look for in the historic cloths. And again, we really want to try to understand more about the deterioration mechanisms that are going on, and helping us to understand more about these cloths, both the early ones, as you see here in the shore books, and the later 19th century samples that we have in our museum collections. Mm-hmm. Great, well, thank you very much.